Welcome back to Aetherin Dark Saga. This is a special Q&A episode and will contain a little announcement at the end, which I'm hoping you'll all enjoy. Firstly, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's listened to the show, and an even bigger thank you to those of you who have recommended it to your friends and family. I've seen the growth of this podcast, and I'm proud to share it with you all. Obviously, there's going to be spoilers in this, so if you haven't listened to the show in its entirety, I'd turn this off right now. Okay, so let's dive in. First question comes from Emma A. What inspired you to start this project as a podcast and not as an audiobook or novel? Well, since I was about 15, I formed a habit of starting things and never finishing them, specifically stories. I have about 20 or so half-done, quarter-done books, some with only 10 pages. they were always fully fleshed out in my mind, but in the end, it's just really rough beginnings. Anyway, I'd been talking to some close friends about how I never finish anything, and the subject of writing came up. It made me wonder that if I actually stuck at something and tried not to write this big Tolkien-level epic, as I always envisioned my first book would be, what would actually happen and ultimately where it could lead to, or even what would the next one be like. So basically I began to write, and here's the thing, I need some sort of like push. I need to have sort of people motivating me, telling me, oh, you're doing well, Phil. Basically I need some like feedback to push me on. So rather than send text files to my friends, I decided, since we all listen to podcasts, I'd just basically narrate it. And next thing I know, someone mentions that it could work as a podcast, and well, that's really it. I hope that clears up why the prologue and part one is written quite differently to the rest of the show. Next question, or should I say questions, comes from Randy Greer of the show Blackstar and Blackstar Chronicle. What's one piece of advice you would give to someone interested in starting their own audio drama? Okay, well, something I wish I had known prior to starting out is that it's imperative to plan things out. Plan, plan, plan. Record, write, record, and listen to your first draft, and then edit it, and then edit that draft again if you want to be more thorough. Up until about episode 6, I wrote, recorded, and edited within a 2-week window between releases. I think I spent 3 weeks on episode 6, and then I continued that process again until the final 3 episodes, and to be honest, it was a terrible idea. I put too much pressure on myself, and I didn't think out the plot lines. Basically, I feel very lucky that the story's turned out the way it has. So my one piece of advice would be plan, 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 and plan some more. If you could bring one of your characters to life and in modern times, who would it be, and what would the real world job be? It'd have to be Orin. And I think for Orin, a wine tasting show or a YouTube channel where he tastes different wines from around the world, and he can basically just say how shit they are compared to Arteria Red. This one's from Carl Bensley. What other plans in terms of podcasting do you have in the future, if any at all? I'm hoping to keep Aetherin with this set of characters, plus or minus a few along the way, for at least another 2 seasons. Then possibly a new story set in the same world, a different continent maybe. I do have plans for other audio dramas. One in particular, Ashfields, is something very different. I haven't got really much worth sharing at the moment, apart from that. But yeah, they're probably going to be some sort of dark storyline. Right, so the next one's from Twitter, and it comes from Podcast Addict James. Well, many other people have asked the same question as well. Is Amvidar, the icon of war, possessed by a demon? And if he isn't, is he dead? Right, basically, the icon of war is not possessed by a demon. But he is possessed, his body is possessed by the Herald of Yorondwy, which was spent most of its time inside Orin of Vale of Glass for most of his life. The Herald, which was identified by Sigulf as Cref Anuk, is using his body in the same way as, say, Astaroth did with Alduin. There is a big difference, but you're going to have to listen to Season 2 to find out more. But yes, he did die. The traitor Melanus poisoned him. Amvidar managed to glimpse the Infinite during the ritual of joining, but the poison was coursing through him, effectively killing him and stopping him from being able to complete the ritual and become what he was meant to be afterwards. Right, next question comes from wizardquizzard by email. Sorry you didn't leave your real name. What is the purpose of the joining ritual? See, there was some sort of structure here. I knew where there was going to be. First, I want to say a big thank you for sending me the email, and I'm quite sure it was the only question I received through email. Also, there were some really nice, kind words from you there. Much appreciated. The ritual, if it had gone correctly, would have basically imparted a piece of Galador's essence into Amvadar. He sort of offers up a piece of his soul to his god, and as a reward for his loyalty, Amvadar would receive the essence of Galador into him. So basically, he's brought to the verge of death using the celestial fire of the god. Then he'd drink from the chalice, imbibing the holy blood of his god. Afterwards, Amvadar would have effectively become a demigod himself, probably surpassing Kriya in strength. She's already undergone the ritual, and that's why, if any of you are wondering, why her eyes glow the way they do. Right, next, Zach Auld of Podcast Junkie asks, what is the inspiration for your characters and world, and how did you come up with the name for them? Sorry, how did you come up with the name for it? The inspiration for my characters are mainly from characters I've played in RPGs like Skyrim or Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, Divinity, Original Sin, that sort of thing. I draw inspiration from heroes from movies and books, but I just love the idea of people being in a world. Not necessarily the reluctant hero, but someone who lives a life fighting monsters or fighting evil, or even someone who's evil themselves. Not for glory or gold, but it's just that, 'cause that's what they do. They know it's what they're good at, or even it's just what they do to survive, you know. With Sigmir, although he's not much of a fan favourite, I wanted him to represent the listener in a way, kind of naive to this world, and he's discovering it alongside you as well, showing the way, like, we are sheltered from the harsh realities of life, and how often we're ignorant to what lies just outside of our door. But the curious nature of humans, in the form of his fascination with books, is represented there. Obviously, books meaning knowledge. So, as for the name Aetherin comes from another unfinished works of man, and it was originally the mountain home of a tribe who went on to become the Venn. They were actually a sort of federation of tribes, the Stone Spear and the Great Bear Tribe. Anyway, I used the name for the world, and instead, although I haven't said as much, the inhabitants believe that Aetherin is basically a world atop a mountain. So imagine a mountain with the peak chopped off, and then this flat plain, basically, containing oceans and continents and smaller mountains and deserts and all living life. But they're not flat earthers, though, because that is too unbelievable even for a fantasy world. The next one comes from Caramel off the Discord channel. Can I ask if you deliberately wanted to do all the voices yourself, or was it a practical decision? As I said before, I was originally going to write a novella. I didn't know anything about audio drama or anyone in that world. In my own typical style, like, rush things, and then I usually figure them out as I go. I mean, I knew I could mimic a few accents fairly well to say the odd phrase, but to be fair, I've had a fair amount of praise about my voice acting and the ability to make the character sound different, and that really feels good to get those sort of comments, and that definitely pushed me along to do more and try more. The main reason being, for me being the sole voice actor, is I didn't know any voice actors, and I didn't know how to contact anyone. I knew I couldn't afford to pay anyone without spending time saving up. And to be honest with you, I am one of the most impatient people you'll ever meet. So I just thought, give it a go, see how it sounds. I mean, to be honest, I do regret it at times, and I'm sure it puts a lot of people off. But it's how I've done things, and when I get to the second season, there'll probably be a few guest parts in there for sure. And yeah, there is some female characters in it. We'll need voicing, and unfortunately, I'm not too good at those. Right, a few more questions. This one's from Garin of the D&D Character Lab podcast. What was the hardest character voice to do? Well, originally, it started off as Sigmir, and I still struggle with him at times, just because I kind of tried to make him quiet and timid, and there was times when he couldn't be like that, and it just felt hard to do that voice, but I've got better as time's gone on. Towards the end, it was Astaroth mainly. I think I genuinely did something to my throat at one point while I was recording the finale. I don't know why it only seemed to happen at that point, but kind of saw it as a fitting reason to end his short-lived reign. What books and movies were your biggest inspirations? Well, I would say books-wise, Bernard Cornwell's Warlord trilogy, as well as his Saxon stories with Uhtred of Bevernburg. If you haven't seen The Last Kingdom on Netflix, by the way, check it out. It's really good. But I would recommend you read the books. Obviously, George Martin's A Song of Fire and Ice, as well as, obviously, Game of Thrones. With Game of Thrones, it was mainly the multi-character perspectives that gave me inspiration. The world is very, like, gritty and raw as well, which, obviously, that appeals to me. Movies like John Boorman's Excalibur and Ridley Scott's Legend as well was a childhood favourite of mine. The animated movie The Flight of Dragons was a massive inspiration for me. I love Legend as well, and the way Tim Curry plays Darkness always inspires me as villains. It's very poetic and also menacing at the same time. Flight of Dragons, interesting fact, has a character in it called Sir Orin Neville Smythe. And he was my favourite and gave this amazing speech when he's about to kill this dragon. But that's where the hunter Orin gets his name from. Excalibur, just because I love the story, really. Merlin steals the show, but that gritty feel and the final battle where King Arthur dies. Sorry, spoiler alert there, but it like always imprinted with me, and I always wanted my stuff to feel like as dark and as gritty and as violent as that. Excellent movie. I'd recommend you check any of those out. Was there a scene that hit you emotionally to write? I have to admit, I got choked up a bit when I was writing the Amvadar praying for Yima scene. And when Ulric walks in and tries to reassure him that he didn't blame him for Yima's death. I kind of put myself in Amvadar's shoes at the time, and I kind of have this bad habit of doing that myself. Blaming myself for things that I have no control over and apologising for them. And I felt like, for me personally, I needed to hear Ulrich's words as much as Amvadar did. I was smiling by the end of it, as he basically, I knew what was coming for Amvadar, so it was nice for that character to get his forgiveness before his ultimate end. Right, the last set of questions come from Forenza. We've seen what it takes to become the icon of war with Amvadar and Braedic's flashback. What does it take to become the icon of magics? Although Kreia didn't have to fight for her position, being a skilled magic user is kind of rare in the world of Aetherin. Kreia basically inherited her title from a former icon, a man named Enhar, who Braedic was a squire for previously to Kreia. The test would basically revolve around a duel similar to the fashion of the Icon of War, but it would be whoever can perform tasks most efficiently, perform harder and harder rituals, whoever could conjure the elements and ultimately defend better against the other. The real skill would be in having restraint as well as the ability to destroy. Kreia had a massive advantage over anyone who would try and challenge for the role just simply because she's psychic, or a psyker, as I say in that world. How many religions are there in Aetherin? Well, in Aetherin there's a countless amount, but in the continent of Arn, where our current story takes place, there's quite a lot. Some are long lost to the sands of time, and there's still some to be discovered, but the Ven have the most, being the only truly polytheistic peoples in. I mean, they have Agvalin, Kaleen, Varenher, Yindos, and Yorunduir as well. The ancient Eridan, the people who populated Arn before the others came, had three main deities. Amun Vae, which was the god of balance. Yorunduir, the great devourer, and one yet to be talked about in the show was Ran, master of the dead. Lunarin's obviously the main religion in Arteria, in both the north and south. Galador worship in Kalimdor, and it's has a slightly different, purer form, which is still practiced in Alantir. That'll be leading into season two. You'll get to see a bit more of that. I haven't actually expanded upon Sundara yet, but unfortunately, it's not going to spoil anything for anyone, but Sundara is in ruins. It doesn't really, it isn't populated anymore. Ballora, well, they worship these like strange things. They're not gods, but I'm going to get into that in season two, so there's something else for you to look into. Look forward to even. How many realms exist outside of Aetherin? And that was realms, by the way. In the story so far, we know of three. Aetherin itself, Bael'Goroth, where the demons reside, Astaroth and his kind. There is many different forms of demon there, as well as Nezrakah himself, the demonic entity, the eternal darkness. And Asarion, which is where Lephias is from. There is some more, but they're mainly planes of existence, and there will be other worlds I'll try and explore further down the line, but I don't want the scope to get too large too soon. Does the newly possessed Amvadar work for the Beloran army since he's kidnapped Sigmir, or is he using him for his own purposes? Herald of Yorinduir, which is known to us as Kreth Anuk, has his own agenda, and it's simply to bring about the coming of his master and god, Yorinduir, the Great Devourer. Without spoiling anything, the people who were known as the Aerodan, they worshipped Yorinduir, as do the Ven. Although he's not worshipped, they recognise him as a god. And the bloodline of the Aerodan is the strongest amongst the Balorans, as well as the Ven. So make of that what you will. But the prison tomb where Astaroth was beneath the Black Fells, that was made by the Aerodan. Okay, so if you've managed to get this far, I just want to say a big thank you for listening to the show, and sorry to the people who I may have missed some of your questions out. A lot of them felt like they were just repeating questions that other people had already asked. I also want to apologise that I got the cut-off date wrong, and I did actually mean for it to be further down the line, but again, it was a mistake on my behalf, and I'm hopefully the next season will answer a lot of these questions. But if anyone has any questions they would like to ask me personally, feel free to email me or DM me, whatever you want to do. I'm more than willing to elaborate on things. Okay, so here's the announcement for you all. While I'm planning out season 2, I plan to get out a spin-off show. Roughly 6 to 8 episodes, and it will be set immediately after the events of Astaroth's capture by the Order. What happened in episode 5... Well, part 5, sorry, where we have a glimpse into the past and how Astaroth came into this world, used Argilus, which is a character will be explored in this spin-off, as a vessel. It's going to feature new characters, and also, this is going to be a first for me, it's going to have some familiar voices, because I will not be the sole voice actor on this project. The plan is to have next to no narration as well, but I can't say if 100% if that is going to be the case. Good news is I'm working on it right now. The bad news is it's coming to the Patreon members first. I don't like putting content behind paywalls, but I want to look after the people who've been kind enough to support this show in a monetary sense. I haven't actually charged anybody for anything yet, so if you want to get on the Patreon, I would really appreciate it. I have, rather than a subscription based, it's pay for what I produce, basically. For information on this, as well as season 2, check out the feed for any updates. All new information is going to be on Twitter, as well as the new Instagram page, Aetherin Podcast, and Twitter was at Aetherin Podcast. If you'd like to join me on a Discord, I chat on there a lot with other creators and fans of the show. It's Podcast Junkies server, and I will put a link in the show notes. Thanks again to everyone who's been listening to the show. It's really been a labour of love of mine, and I can't wait to make season 2 as well. It's got some other future projects there, and I really want to make this better than I did before. Thank you very much for listening. Remain vigilant. P.S. Sorry about all the erms and arms and all the things like that. I literally did this in about 5 takes, and yeah. Thanks for listening. Also, I meant to say of ice and fire, not fire and ice. Maybe that would have been a better title, George. Don't think he's listening, though.